Hello and welcome to the Tennis Menu's Daily French Open Show. I'm your host, Val Febbo, and we're here for thetennismenu.com. And remember, you can get an annual subscription for only $99.90 US to make yourself the best tennis coach you can be. Head to thetennismenu.com to get that package, and it is absolutely fantastic. We have got a massive edition of the show today because last night in the men's draw, things started to escalate. Dominic Thiem and Rafael Nadal continue their collision course. Thiem with a sensational win over Casper Ruud. Stan Wawrinka gone in five over young Frenchman Hugo Gaston. Gaston is the lowest ranked player since 2002 to reach the Roland Garros fourth round. Unbelievable effort from the young Frenchman. We thought Marco Cecchinato would be able to defeat Alexander Zverev. Well, Zverev served brilliantly last night to hold on in a straight set victory. Plenty to get through on the women's side as well, with Simona Halep in ominous form. Caroline Garcia coming back from a set and a breakdown. We'll chat about that. Kiki Bertens also recovering from injury as well. And that's something that we will touch on with how to get over a cramp, along with why are the lower ranked players doing so well. We have got plenty to get through on today's program, but we can't do it without these two men, and one of which is the best high performance coach in the business. His name is Mark Sefulis. Mark, how are you, mate?
I'm going well, Val, and obviously an incredible night on the men's side where you've got two players outside the top 200 in the world getting through, and that's an incredible feat for both of those players. And to just imagine how a player that's 239 in the world gets through and beats a Grand Slam champion, which is amazing. And he's actually lost four of his last challenger matches, so not even on the tour, the high-end tour matches, which is incredible for him. And we're going to definitely go down that path today and talk about that. And what a great recovery from Hannibal Lecter. And to be able to get through and get through a match last night was incredible. So Kiki Bertens, well done on recovering from probably what looked like a cramp that was going to end her life. And she's actually come through and done a great job. So, yeah, lots to talk about today.
Yeah, there definitely is. And our resident multilingual speaker, Joel Ferrucci, is here, our translator. How are you?
Yeah, going well, mate. I think I'm going to stick with the English this morning. But I'm going well. More importantly, though, how are you going? Because, you didn't wake up all that happy this morning.
No, I was very flat. These idiots. It was just a terrible night. Absolutely terrible. They could have won. It was ill-disciplined with 50-metre penalties. And you know what? I'm saying it. The umpires, if any AFL umpires are listening now, I know it's not tennis, you are terrible. You are terrible people. You're playing with people's lives. You're terrible. All right, let's continue. I'm starting off on a bang. Hugo Gaston, I think that's the one that we should start with here. And he's the first player to bagel Stan Wawrinka in a Grand Slam since Novak Djokovic did at the Australian Open 2015 semifinals. And I remember that night because Djokovic seemingly, well, he had all the injuries in the fourth set that night, but apparently they all went away in the fifth. And then also, he's the, I think, lowest-ranked player to beat Stan Wawrinka at a Grand Slam at 239 in the world. Get this, guys. He was born in September 2000. Mary Pierce was France's last Grand Slam champion at the French Open in 2000. So he hasn't seen a French Grand Slam champion in his lifetime. And he's still in the draw, carrying the French hopes in this Roland Garros. And yeah, it was an epic win over Stan last night. And it's one that I didn't think would happen because Stan looked in pretty good form. And Mark, talk us through, I think, the mentality of someone that's ranked so, or the steely resolve, I guess, of losing the fourth set and then to bagel someone that's been there and done that like Stan Wawrinka.
Yeah, I guess the biggest thing with players of that ranking is that it's a win-win scenario because he's never been this far in a Grand Slam, probably ever. And it's one of those things that if you win the match, great, it's a bonus. If you lose the match, wow, I've done a great job and I've lost to a good player. So he has nothing to lose in a situation where you're playing one of the best players that has been obviously part of the last 15 years of the men's tour. And, you know, he just goes out and swings and that's all you have to do. I mean, you've got nothing to lose when you're a player ranked 239 in the world. And this is a great pay packet for him. I remember seeing something last night around his career prize money is like $170,000 and he's walked away already so far with $225,000. So he's made more prize money in this tournament than he has for his whole career so far. And incredible to even imagine him and also Sebastian Korda getting through at the rankings they are. But you know, it's one of those tournaments that anything's possible with the conditions and the time of year that it's at, and obviously COVID allowing the opportunity for these players that are probably outside the normal cut of a Grand Slam to be able to get in and have an opportunity to win. And that, to me, has been the big bonus of this tournament this year. And Gaston, wow, what an incredible match to come back and, you know, lose the first set. And you'd probably think, you know, a player of that level would say, wow, I'm down a set to Wawrinka, you know, at least I'm here, at least it's an opportunity, whatever, I've done enough. But he fought back, won the next two, lost the fourth set, and could again gone, you know, oh, that's okay, I've taken him to five, it's a great opportunity. But to beat him 6-love, I mean, that is just an absolute incredible feat for a young man and someone ranked the way he is. And it's an awesome thing for tennis to see this happening.
Is it COVID that's allowed these lower ranked players? And you sent me a stat this morning that before today, for 18 years, a player ranked outside the top 200 hadn't reached the last 16 of men's singles at Roland Garros. It's happened twice. And then the only two players to reach the fourth round of a Grand Slam before winning a challenger title were Luka Puig and Milos Raonic. And now it's happened an extra two times with Korda and Gaston. So is it COVID or are they just that good? Well, they are that good, but...
Yeah. Look, I think players at that level, and people underestimate a ranking. You know, a player at 300 in the world is just as good a ball striker as someone in the top 100. And the differences are very minor. It comes down to some consistency in what they do and making sure they can do that on a more regular basis. But it also comes down to the ability to pay for things week in, week out. It's very hard for a player of that level. And, you know, you think of a Wawrinka would have had a coaching team with him, you know, how long for. This guy's probably on his own. I mean, he's in France, so he's probably got some support crew around him. But to be able to travel on tour with a support team is not easy. So these guys are just as good as the top 100. They are. There's not much difference. It's just the consistency of what they do with it is the main thing. So COVID has given them an opportunity, which is great. Well, not saying just these guys, but most of the guys in general at this ranking. The opportunity has been given. But to take it is another level. And well done to those two boys in particular. You know, I think it's a great thing for tennis. And I think people or players, and it's been said this for a long time, of the lower rank need more opportunity, more prize money to give them a better chance to be successful in this sport.
Yep, the difference between best and worst, and that's what we've spoken about throughout this tournament and throughout the US Open show as well. But Joel, moving on to you, Dominic Thiem and Rafa Nadal continue on their collision course for that semi-final epic that we're hoping to get because it is a tantalising prospect. But Thiem against Ruud last night, that was one that we penciled in at the start of the tournament saying, okay, that's probably a third test in a row for Thiem with Cilic. Then he would have faced Sock or Opelka. He faced Sock, beat him in straight, then Casper Ruud. Semis in Rome, semis in Hamburg, and now Thiem has just dispatched him. How ominous is this?
Yeah, it is quite ominous. What was most impressive about Dominic last night, I think, certainly the couple of shots that stood out. When you're feeling good, you definitely make these shots. Maybe when you're not feeling so good, you maybe miss them. But there are a couple of backhand winners down the line where Dominic Thiem really, he didn't have a lot of time to prepare for the shot, wind back. All he really had to do was just give a little flick of the wrist, and he pulled off some incredible backhand winners down the line. Casper really didn't really have any answer. It only took a few breaks for Dominic Thiem in the end. Unfortunately, we won't get that Thiem versus Wawrinka battle, but it'll be interesting to see how he prepares for Hugo Gaston. Probably not a player that Dominic's had a lot to do with in the past, so it'll be interesting to see how his camp goes about that one.
Yeah, I think so. And he's taken down Casper, the unfriendly ghost, and then he's up against Gaston, the villain from Beauty and the Beast. So he's just going to have to take down all these lovable cartoon characters. Or actually, Gaston was the villain, so he's not that lovable, but he thought he was. But so Dominic Thiem's got his work cut out for him because he's going to have the French hopes on his shoulders here, Hugo Gaston. But Rafa Nadal looked really good against Stefano Travaglia. Adds another bagel to his tally, so it's just ridiculous. I think that's 111 at Roland Garros now for Rafael Nadal, only dropping 5 games. But Alexander Zverev so it was a mixed day for the Italians. They had 2 go through to the fourth round and 2 lose. So Lorenzo Sonego got through 19-17 in the third set tiebreak against Taylor Fritz. That's epic. But Marco and Yannick Sinner got through over Federico Coria. But Alexander Zverev, this isn't one that we thought was actually going to go to the German. I think all three of us both thought that Chekinato would get through. 6-1, 7-5, 6-3. Mark, Zverev served particularly well today. It's probably the best he served since the tennis restart. Talk us through the numbers and what you thought he did well.
Yeah, he served incredibly well. And obviously over the US Open and the French Open, he hasn't served fantastically well. And his second serve has been a big hindrance in his game. But Chekinato couldn't really expose him because he actually served quite well today. And it was a really challenging one. And I think Chekinato just really didn't expose the weaknesses of Zverev enough on the day. And that was the big thing. I think the slowness of the courts is probably what hurt him. On the day, and obviously, you know, to be able to pressure Zverev, you need to get some depth and some speed on the ball. The conditions probably didn't play into his favour in that respect, but you can't take it away from Zverev. I mean, he was outstanding on the day, and well done to him to get through. And obviously, you know, backing up from a great US Open, and we all probably sat here at the start of the tournament in our preview show and thought, how's it going to affect him mentally? He's a bit of a fruitcake, so is it going to get to him that he's lost that match? Is he going to really struggle to come back and fight back from it? So he's definitely answered the critics and done a great job to get to this point. And playing a young gun in Jannik Sinner is going to be a real challenge. But, you know, I'm going to say it. He can't lose to two Italians. Are going to sit there together over a bowl of Buster tonight and they're going to chat about how to take this guy down. And I think Sinner is in a really good position. He's playing some really good tennis to be able to really challenge Zverev.
So do I. I think he's playing wonderfully well at the moment. And some of the fourth round matchups are pretty tantalizing. And a man that's flown really under the radar throughout this tournament is Diego Schwartzman. He hasn't dropped a set yet, the Rome finalist. And he took down our friend Norbert Gombos, 7-6, 6-3, 6-3. He looks in really ominous form. And he'll take on Lorenzo Sonego in the fourth round, but then could set up a quarterfinal clash with Dominic Thiem. He's by no means having a bad tournament, and he's been absolutely fantastic. But what do you say, like, for someone of his height, it just doesn't seem as though, and you did an article on this at a couple of weeks ago on our Tennis Menu blog section, if you head to thetennismenu.com, tiny but mighty, some of the best modern players of 175 centimetres or less. Doing that research, what did you find and looking at sort of Schwartzman's recent results, is there any indication that maybe if he does somehow get through Thiem, can he beat Nadal again?
Yeah, well, the smattering of players that I looked at, the majority of them were clay quarters primarily, probably except a guy like Michael Chang, I think. But there were a lot of grinders and not a lot of Grand Slams won in there. There were a few, but not a lot. So, but look, I think if Diego Schwartzman is really going to push on up into the later stages of a slam, you would have to think that this is probably his best chance. Obviously, he's in good form. That goes without saying. But for a guy of his height, you know, given what we've been saying about the courts and the height of the bounce and the speed of the ball, the speed of the courts, you'd have to assume that this is probably his best chance to win. I certainly think that he can get through Lorenzo Sonego in the next round. So yeah, I think he'll get through that. Whether he can get past a guy like Dominic Thiem, I'm not quite sure. As we said before, Thiem's just playing with a lot of confidence. He's really hitting freely, but you know, I guess the fact that Diego has gone under the radar could really work in his favor. I mean, no one's really sort of talking about him. I'm sure guys like Dominic Thiem and Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic, for them, he's probably not flying under the radar. They've probably taken a lot of notice of him. But from the outside, the fact that no one's really saying much about him, could that work in his favour? Potentially, yes.
Definitely. And those fourth round matchups that we spoke about, Nadal v. Korda, Sinner v. Zverev, Thiem v. Gaston and Schwartzman against Sonego. So that's going to be tantalising. A few of those are really, really exciting matchups. So I can't wait to see what happens as we get into the second week of Roland Garros in men's singles. But we'll move on to the women's side of things. And Simona Halep looked, she was awesome last night against Amanda Anisimova. Anisimova took her out last year at the French Open. And, well, that was just a complete 180, because Halep just killed her. 6-love, 6-1. It was a demolition derby. It was almost, you didn't want to watch anymore, but you couldn't look away because it was just getting more and more damaging. But it was just, it was awesome from Simona Halep. Like, words cannot describe what she did last night. Caroline Garcia, well, unbelievable. I watched the start of this match and Elise Mertens was all over her. Was up a set and a break, 1-6, 6-4, 7-5 in favour of the French woman who continues her good form. And look, this might be something in what I brought up on day two, Mark, when... Carol, or our day one review, when Caroline Garcia beat Annette Contevate, she struggles playing against the French Open with the French Open crowd. There's nobody there, so she's loving it.
She is. No pressure. Just go out there and hit some balls. And obviously, you know, it's a challenge playing in your own country, as we did mention on day two. And we've had that with Australian players forever. But the biggest thing for her is once the weight is off the shoulders, she's an incredible player. She's shown it over a long period of time that she can really play this game. And she's actually playing some really free tennis and playing as the underdog too. Like, you know, she's playing a few players that are, you know, ranked above her, probably in better form than her. And yet she's just having a crack. And that's, at the end of the day, you know, when you've got no pressure on yourself, you just go out there and feel free to swing and no one's going to have a crack at you in the crowd, and the tabloids aren't going to worry about it because it's not really huge at the moment, the French Open. But it's just having a go, and it's a win-win scenario for her. She's playing some great tennis, and who knows? Could this be the year of the French? I mean, it could be one of those tournaments that, you know, you've got a few of the Frenchies getting through and playing some good tennis with no pressure on them.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Mark. I think she's flourishing in these conditions and without the crowd there. And it's something that maybe Tennis Australia could look at for Sam Stosur possibly for one last run at the Australian Open. Who knows? Because it could very well work. She sometimes feels the pressure, but we do love Sam, and it'd be great to see her have maybe one final long run at the Australian Open. But yeah, I'm not sure that we will get that. But Kiki Bertens, Mark and Joel, look. After Joel, you ran us through it so beautifully. What happened in the Sara Errani, and the language was fantastic. And look, she walked off. She didn't walk off. She was wheeled off in a wheelchair with some severe cramp. But she came over to Katerina Siniakova last night. Are you at all surprised by what happened here?
No, not really, to be honest. I guess, you know, a player of Kiki Bertens' standing, you're really looking at probably these matches and saying that that she wins these. So it was good to see her bounce back from that, despite, as we keep saying, leaving the court looking like something akin to Hannibal Lecter. But what I'm really interested in is how she would have recovered from that match and got herself ready for this one. So, I mean, Mark, I'm sure that you haven't... been probably in a camp where a player has pulled up quite as badly as Kiki did in that last match. But if you are in that kind of situation, what kind of things are you doing after a match like that to get ready for 2 days' time? Like, what's your routine?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've had a few times where players have got basically some heat stroke and cramped and full body cramps, and Australian Open time can be absolutely brutal. And that's probably the challenging part. But after a match, I mean, you look at the rumor was she was 45 minutes before she stopped cramping, which is a real challenge. But you've got to get your electrolytes in and salts in and, high salt meals. You're obviously trying to keep yourself moving a little bit, not to sort of sit still for too long, get your water intake right up, make sure your hydration levels are there. There wouldn't have been much training the next day if she wasn't feeling great. So you probably would have bypassed a bit of that or had a light hit later in the afternoon. Because not only once you stop cramping, people think that's it, but your muscles have been in spasm and they actually tighten up quite severely. So there would have been a lot of massage. There would have been a lot of looking after the body in that way. So, I mean, luckily it's a Grand Slam because you've got that day in between, and that's probably where it probably helped her. And, you know, I wasn't sure whether she'd come up. I mean, it's one of those things that is a very challenging thing to go through. And it looked like her forearms were cramping as well. So whether or not gripping the racket would have been hard if she was still a bit tight in the hand. So, I mean, you'd say that there would have been great medical teams around her to help her out. But, it's never a good sight seeing a player actually go through full body cramp. It's actually, I've had half body cramp, full cramp, and that is painful enough. It's just because I was unfit, not because I was dehydrating and trying to play some footy back in the back end of my my playing days. But yeah, it's never an easy thing to feel to go through, and it can take a few days to recover from. So yeah, she's obviously recovered amazingly well, and yeah, Lazarus is back again. So well done, it's good.
How many nicknames has this woman had during this tournament? Hannibal Ecker, Lazarus. I'm sure there's going to be something else by the time, by the next time she plays. But no, absolutely phenomenal effort from Kiki Burton's. Alina Svitolina continues her run of form as well over Ekaterina Alexandrova, 6-4, 7-5. Iga Swiatek over Eugenie Bouchard, 6-3, 6-2. Barbara Krejcikova ending Svetlana Peronkova's run at the French Open, 5-7, 6-4, 6-3. Nadia Podoroska over Anna Carolina Schmedlova, 6-3, 6-2. The world number 131 from Argentina continuing her run at this Roland Garros into the fourth round for the first time of her career. And Martina Trevisan, well, we've got an Italian in the, we've got a lot of Italians in still in the men's draw. And, well, she continues on the women's side as well with a massive win over Maria Sakkari. 1-6, was down 6-4 in the second set tiebreak, saved two match points to win the next two sets, 7-6, 6-3. But tonight's matches, guys, we've got some unbelievable. I think I'm excited about a couple of them. I reckon Matteo Berrettini over against Daniel Altmaier might be quite interesting. Altmaier can play some pretty solid tennis when he wants to. Irina Barra against Sofia Kenin. I reckon we could see an upset there from the young. Or she, I was going to say from the young Romanian. She's actually older than Kenin, so I wouldn't call her the youngish Romanian, I should say. Fiona Ferrer against Patricia Maria Tigg on Chatrier. That's not one I thought that would be on Chatrier, but Fiona Ferrer carrying the French hopes. Novak Djokovic against Daniel Alani Galan. Roberto Bautista Agu against Pablo Carreño Busta. This one is going to go 5 hours, I reckon. That one, just with the form that they're both in.
Only five.
Well, look, maybe seven. Who knows? It could be a repeat of John Isner v. Nicolas Mahu. We don't know, but their serves aren't as good as what Mahu and Isner's were on the grass. Clay is a much easier to break serve. But Stefanos Tsitsipas in action as well. Petra Kvitova, Danielle Collins against Garbiñe Muguruza. Really excited to see what happens there. Kevin Anderson against Andrei Rublev. Roberto Carballes Baena against Grigor Dimitrov. Look, I'm a little bit upset at Roberto because he has robbed us of Dimitrov v. Shapovalov in the third round, and I really wanted to see that. So I'm upset, but I reckon the Spaniard might be able to get a set off the Bulgarian. Yelena Ostapenko in action as well. Arina Sabalenka against Ons Jabeur. Christian Garin against Karin Khachanov. Martin Fucsovics in action as well as Petra Martic. So we have a bumper scheduled tonight. Hopefully we do see some five setters like we have done over the first few days, over the first 11 days of the tournament, including qualifying. But yeah, it's going to be very exciting tonight. Mark Sifullis, thank you very much for your part in the show.
Thank you very much, Val and Joel. And yeah, obviously looking forward to some great tennis tonight. I'm really looking forward to actually Sabalenka and Jabeur. Sabalenka is a fitness coach, is a very good friend of mine. And obviously on Jabeur, we had Shane Leonard yesterday on the show. And she, you know, obviously has got one of her best results on clay so far, and had a great 2020. And Shane was a little bit modest. He's definitely the brains behind a lot of these results. So you know, looking forward to seeing that match tonight. And yeah, I think Novak's going to steamroll his way through once again. And yeah, a bit scary that he's playing so well. But looking forward to tonight's tennis. So thanks, guys, for the show again.
Me too. What up, Mark and Joel Frigi? Have you got any other languages to leave us with, or?
No, I don't tonight. I might just keep it with the old Ingles. Yeah, but no, thanks for the show, boys. It was good, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Zai Jen, Joel. Zai Jen. Goodbye in Chinese. That's all I remember from doing Chinese up until year 10 at school. That's hello and goodbye, and how to count to 10. That's literally it. But let's move on because we probably do need to wrap this up. It's getting a bit loose now. Mark Sifullis, Joel Frigi, thank you for joining me, Val Febbo. Remember, you can head to thetennismenu.com and subscribe to our annual package for just $99.90 US to make yourself a better tennis coach. It's an absolutely fantastic initiative that Mark's put together, and yeah, brilliantly done by him, Nick, George, Joel. I'm included in that, but I only do the new stuff, and also Callum and Nick coming aboard as well. So awesome stuff. And hopefully tonight's action is good. We'll catch you tomorrow on the Tennis Menu's Daily Roland Garros Show.